is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee, along with Brian Rowitz from ESPN West Palm. Jonathan Hood is out, but of course, if you ever want to hear Jay Hood and his wrestling takes, always make sure you listen to SiriusXM Pro Wrestling Nation every Sunday from 9 a.m. until noon Eastern Time. The person who's in charge of the show, Evan Cohen, was complaining about having to listen to me on ESPN Radio, was waiting for Jonathan Hood, especially coming off of a big PLE, like Elimination Chamber. So Jay Hood shared a lot of his thoughts and will continue the show as he signed a contract extension with Pro Wrestling Nation. But where we start, again, we are on that road to WrestleMania. Elimination Chamber is past us in WWE. We're getting close to Revolution, but we start, Brian, with WWE today, because even though Cody Rhodes, he did not win that Elimination Chamber.
He didn't win the Rumble either, don't forget.
Did not win the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. Is not a WWE champion. Well, he's probably going to become the WWE champion on Friday night when he takes on Drew McIntyre for the WWE Championship on SmackDown, putting him in the main event, one of the main events, I guess, against Randy Orton. The decision to put Cody in the main event to you is fill in the blank.
Unnecessary? I mean, I feel like they heard all the complaints. We were complaining about it. Fans were complaining. We don't want Cody and Drew again at Mania. We don't want to see that again. We've seen three stages of hell. It's unnecessary. So Orton wins the Elimination Chamber. And you're like, all right, I can do Drew versus Orton. There's a story there. Orton isn't exactly the young star, but hey, we haven't seen him in the main event scene a bunch, especially since he came back. It makes sense. And then post-Elimination Chamber is like, hey, Friday night, Drew versus Cody for the title, which, like you said, everyone assumes will mean Cody wins the title. So it just feels unnecessary. We're allowed to have a WrestleMania without Cody in the main event. He can still be your QB1. He can still do the press junket. He can still be front and center. That doesn't mean he needs to be in the main event, and that's the path we're going to. We assume he wins the title, and we assume he ends night one in Vegas.
Yeah, like Roman Reigns didn't have a championship match last year. He was in the triple threat. And now he's back in the championship match this year. It's uninspiring to me for Cody. Tell an interesting story outside of the championship, please. For the love of God, tell one with Cody outside of the WWE championship. I dare you. I double dog dare you. It just seems like they can't do it. They can't do it. I don't know why. I don't know why they refuse to even try, because you're telling me Cody versus Sammy? Like, if you, Sammy's kind of been drifting maybe potentially towards a heel character, and the interactions they've had backstage, you can't tell a good Cody Sammy story and have them put together a match that steals the show in the middle of the card on Saturday or Sunday? Like, that could have been fantastic. Instead, Cody versus Randy, LOL, Cody wins. Like, all right, let's just keep going. Like, it's just so uninspiring, and it makes me care about Cody even less, because Sammy ends up being right. Like, Cody doesn't have to overcome anything. Like, getting screwed out of a match gets you championship match. All right, where's Fatu's?
Right.
Fatu got screwed. Where's Fatu's championship opportunity? We saw Logan Paul. Logan Paul eliminated three guys in the Elimination Chamber. Got eliminated by, got screwed over by Seth Rollins. By this logic, shouldn't then Logan Paul be getting a World Heavyweight Championship match against CM Punk? I mean, if you're just getting screwed, gets you an automatic championship bid. Like,
anyone that lost a title match to Roman during the Bloodline era? There was interference there. There was screw jobs there. Shouldn't we have a whole long list of it? Like, it's just the logic doesn't add up.
Yeah, no, I don't like it. I don't care. I wish they could do something more interesting. Now, can Cody versus Randy get interesting? Sure.
Yeah.
But also, like, I guess I just didn't care for the route in which we got here, right? And then there's reports. Well, they wanted Cody because they wanted him in the Rumble. They wanted him in the Elimination Chamber. Like, I don't know, man. Like, it feels like you could have done a lot better creatively than whatever the hell they're doing. They booked themselves into a corner with Drew, decided they had to hotshot it onto him because they kept going back to the Drew well and having him lose. Now there's reports that Drew's going to be gone after WrestleMania anyway because he's got to be filming Highlander. So, I don't know, man. Like,
those reports seem a little convenient, though. Like, we didn't hear about that a week ago. Now, some of this title match is set, and now we hear, oh, yeah, well, Drew's leaving after Mania. And, like, to your point about the storytelling, WrestleMania is supposed to be the end. It's supposed to be the season finale. Like, we want build-up to it. whatever match we get on that side, on the SmackDown side, is going to be 4 to 5 weeks of buildup, and that's it. And, like, that's disappointing to see. Like, at least with Roman and Punk, there have been nuggets. There have been stuff through the years. And, yeah, there's history with Cody and Randy. And I'm sure what they're going to say is, like, long-term storytelling. Randy looked at the belt multiple times. But, like, give us a little bit more to make it a season finale worth it.
Yeah, because, again, well, again, it just feels like one of those season finales or series finales that just kind of, oh, crap, we don't know what to do. How do we make this big Seinfeld? Hey, let's invite all the guest stars we've ever had. They're back. You're going to love it. Okay, a little unsatisfying. Yeah. You know, so I just, it feels like they're incapable of telling a story with Cody without the championship around. And that's just disappointing. At least when we got to the LOL Cena wins portion of John Cena's career, they figured out ways to do things with John Cena outside of the championship. And in fact, had John Stewart screw him out of the championship at one of their PLEs. So, like, and he created the U.S. Open Championship and all those different things that Cena kind of did, you know, when he was done after, you know, his 16th world championship, or between the 15th and 16th, they kind of spaced some of those out before he obviously got the 17th as part of the retirement tour. I just wish they could do something with Cody, because it just, him coming out every week, hey, what do you want to talk about? And then the feud builds, what do you want to talk about? And then him yelling enough into a freaking microphone one more time. I guarantee you that's going to happen. It's going to happen. Between now and WrestleMania, he is going to get frustrated with a promo or something that Randy Orton says, and enough. Like, okay, man, like, just.
But even the Fatu thing, like you mentioned Cody and Sammy, like Cody and Fatu, we had the Saturday Night's Main Event where they didn't actually have a match. Like, I'd be interested in that. Like, those two in the middle of a card and Fatu getting his WrestleMania moment, like, that would have worked for me. Like, you have stuff there with Cody, and you just by default, like, well, no, we need him in the title picture. Like, it makes no sense.
No, you don't. And we've had this conversation multiple times. Rock wasn't in every WrestleMania main event. Stone Cold wasn't in every WrestleMania main event. Like, when you've had these top stars, they're not always there. I know Cena was more often than not. And really, Roman has been, especially since they've gone to the two-night format. Like, Roman's always in one of those main matches. But sorry, Cody, you're not the star that Roman is. Like, and again, maybe it's because Roman's not around all that often. But, man, there is just an aura around that dude. Like, when he's out there. Him and Punk had me just, again, I mean, Punk had some gimmick infringement, like, I think that we need to maybe discuss a little bit, and, like, Christian could be kind of upset bringing up dead fathers and whatnot, but, like, that promo battle was fun. It had me on the edge of my seat, and maybe because they continue to shove Cody down our throats, like, it's like they didn't learn any lessons from the 2010s.
Right.
Like, in the whether it was Roman, whether it was Cena, whoever you were trying to jam down our throats, like the fan base just vehemently rejected. Eventually Roman got there. Look, and I was into the Cody finishing the story stuff, and then he got to do the stuff with Lesnar, gets his rematch, finally gets the win. That's fantastic. That was a couple years ago at this point, man. Like, and it still feels like they're trying to live off of that. You've got to evolve this character somehow, some way. You got to evolve the character and make it more interesting.
Do you accept it a little bit more if it isn't the end of night one? We talk about it all the time. The main event is the last match. You can call it a quadruple main event, an main event. If the women end night one and Cody is second to last, do you look at it a little bit differently?
Well, no. I mean, I would not be shocked if Cody's starting one of these nights. Because especially with the first hour on ESPN2, night two is on ESPN, right? So you've got the first hour of each night on one of the ESPN. So if he kicked off Sunday and it's on big ESPN, you've got Cody Rhodes, one of your big stars, against Randy Orton, who's a name that a lot of people recognize because he's been around been around forever. Like, that wouldn't shock me of, hey, look at these guys. We're putting them on, you know, one of the biggest cable stations that we can with ESPN to try to draw people in over the ESPN app. Like, that was my initial thought of once they announced that. Like, I don't think you're going to put, you know, an undercard. Like, I don't think Drew McIntyre versus Jacob Fatu in that first hour is going to draw anybody in terms of drawing subscribers.
We've talked about a lot, like, the picture, the poster, Rhea and Jade in that spot. Where, like, those two in the ring staring out for, like, oh, like, this is interesting. Like, those look like monsters out there. Like, that's something I want to see more of. Those two sort of fit that role for me, to where you could make a case they deserve a main event, but I think that could be something also.
Yeah, I think they could kick off because honestly, like that's a pretty big spot too, to be like kicking off either night on ESPN2 or ESPN on either night. Like I feel that's almost just as big as a main event spot. And honestly, I mean, I know we're going to be talking about the WWE championships later. Like the story, and we'll wait and see since it is still fresh because we haven't seen Jade and Rhea face to face. They've had their social media interactions, apparently a little bit of shoot going on there with the work, but I'll see. Like, yes, I think that poster looks good, but I don't know if that's going to be main event worthy because Jade Cargill in a main event just doesn't feel great to me. Meanwhile, the work that the backstage promo, the vignette, whatever you want to call it, that we got out of Liv Morgan, like Liv Morgan and Stephanie Vaquer, to me is building towards, oh, that's the primetime women's match, just like Punk versus Roman's the primetime men's match. So I think maybe night one closes out with Vaquer versus Liv. I mean, and everybody knows night two is Punk versus Roman.
Right. Yes. 100% agree. And that's it. Like when you put it out that way, I do wonder now, like, you could justify not putting Cody in the title match. Somehow he loses. Maybe Sammy costs him. We got a Sammy heel turn on Friday night. Sammy Cody opened that night too. And now it's like, all right, we've got something for Cody. He doesn't need to be in the title picture. In that situation, Drew and Orton is a mid-card match. Like, they're nowhere near the main event, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But at least it's something different, and I'd sort of be okay with that.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's just not what's going to happen. It's just not what's going to happen.
So we got to get the entry. Like, that hour on ESPN, 47 minutes of it is going to be Cody's entrance. But we're going to get it. And everyone's going to go, whoa. And fans are like, oh, that is pretty fun. I want to watch more of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's, again, maybe I'm way off there, but it just seems logical to me if Cody's not going to be in the main event. I lean towards kicking off night two just because being on ESPN is that much bigger than being on ESPN2. But that's the kind of way I thought when they initially, because did they announce that during the PLE on Saturday?
Yeah, I think that's when they announced it. Yeah.
Okay. Like again, a lot of this information always just runs together. It's like, okay, wait, when did I actually find this out and when did I know it? But that was the first thought that ran through my head of, oh, okay, whatever match Cody is going to be in, because they've put him with our guy, Evan Cohen, on Unsportsmanlike, on Get Up, First Take and stuff like that. That he can be a recognizable face to an ESPN audience.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And it's a big spot for him. And they'll have us interested Friday night. So, like, you get a good pop there. I'm still holding that hope that maybe there's a swerve and Drew is still champion, but not holding my breath.
All right, we got a lot of other things to dive into here. We call it the three count on GKW, the other top three stories in the world of professional wrestling. What do we have at number one this week, Brian?
All right, with the Chamber in the book, with the Rumble in the books, we have our four championship matches for Mania. It'll be Cody or Drew versus Randy Orton, Punk versus Roman, Jade versus Rhea, and Stephanie Vaquer versus Liv. Which champ is most likely to drop their title at WrestleMania? And we can rank most to least likely.
Okay, so yeah, so one most likely to least likely, one through four. I'll just reveal my list. You can reveal yours, and then we can dive in. So what I have at my number one, I've got Jade Cargill at number one.
Okay.
It just feels like she's not even that visible a lot on SmackDown. It took her forever to defend that championship. Like, she would just come out. I mean, seriously, like, the first month of her having that championship was her coming out saying that she's that bitch and then going backstage.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
And, like, you give me the chant, you know, it feels like SmackDown needs some invigoration right now, especially at 3 hours. And I think that Rhea Ripley going over there, Rhea Ripley as the champ coming out of Mania, certainly could provide that over on SmackDown. I've got Stephanie Vaquer at number two. Just feels like to me, Jay, with Liv, feels like Liv's going to be a champ. Number three, I've got Cody.
Okay.
I think Cody, because again, I'm projecting that Cody's going to be the champ going in against Randy Orton. And I think the least likely to lose is CM Punk.
Yeah.
I feel that Punk is one of the biggest draws in WWE right now. And I feel him still being champion and beating Roman gives him a lot more. Like, if Roman wins, I'm not sure what's next. And I'm not sure what's next either for Punk, but the fact that he's there every week, it becomes intriguing. Like, you can reheat, oh, what's happening with Finn Balor? Oh, are some of these younger guys ready to kind of take that step up to CM Punk? So I've got Punk at four.
Yeah.
Most likely to lose.
I agree with the bottom. I agree. I think Punk is least likely just because he shows up to work. I think there's more to do there. I think they've sort of learned like the part-time champion doesn't really work. Orton, I can make a case for him getting the, you know, what, 15, 16, whatever number we're at right now.
I think like, that would be 15 for him.
Okay. It's been a while since he's been world champion, so there's a moment there. I flip 1 and 2. I think Liv winning is most likely and taking it from Vicar, where Liv is becoming sort of that face of the franchise where she's doing all this stuff. We've seen the character growth. She's healthy right now. I think her winning there. Jade and Rhea, yes, it makes sense to put it on Rhea, but at least if Jade wins, you add a little bit more oomph to her character to being able to say, hey, yeah, I beat Rhea. And then maybe you do a few more months of Rhea chasing her and Rhea can win it at like SummerSlam. So I can make a case there. Liv losing, I really can't make a case to where Stephanie Vaquer leaves Mania as still a champion.
Yeah, that's a great point. Other than they just love Vaquer, right? Yeah. Like it's very obvious that the WWE loves Vaquer, but it's funny with Liv. You mentioned her kind of being a baby face. Like she's not.
No, she's not.
She gets that reaction. Like she gets that reaction, but her entire backstage vignette was about her being a heel. Yes, right. She's privileged. Yes, she's all these things that Vaquer said about her, and she's like, yeah, and I'm proud of it. Like.
But that's why I think when she becomes champion, Raquel getting tired of that and becoming a babyface, you tell plenty of stories with those two, and then that chase, it could be entertaining.
100%. But the problem is, like, everybody still loves Liv. This is the problem with, and I think for the most part, you know, both sides have kind of, over at AEW, MJF is a heel, and he still kind of gets some of those heel reactions, even though everybody loves him. But that's the tough part of trying to do like traditional storytelling in professional wrestling now. Like, even you can do and say all the dastardly things that you want. Like, sometimes the crowd's just going to react how they want to react. And if they want to like someone, they're just going to like them. And that's what's happening with Liv. I mean, it's what happened with Hangman when he burned down a bleeping house in AEW. Like,
I mean, even Raquel. Raquel is supposed to be a heel, and fans were disappointed when she got eliminated on Saturday. Like, you heard the boos, like, ah, it's like, no, you're supposed to cheer the heel getting knocked out. Like, that's how this works. But here we are.
Yeah, but it's just hard, you know? So you take the characters and you try to tell as compelling stories as you can. The main TV example that I always think of, and I felt so bad for, and the actress's name is escaping me, but if you ever watch Breaking Bad, Walter White's wife, Skyler, like she's the voice of reason. She's the good guy trying to get her husband not to, you know, sell crystal meth. And she's like she got death threats from people, like not understanding like the whole character thing. And like, it's very strange. Like a lot of people hate the character, even though she's like very obviously one of the very few people worth rooting for in the show because her family's getting torn apart because her husband decided to, you know, sell crystal meth. But again, that's just how modern day audiences react to things. And that has bled over into the world of professional wrestling where anti-heroes and we're just going to like who we want to like.
Yeah, I think also it goes to the storytelling aspect. Like we have had Liv on this show multiple times. We've talked about Liv. And early on, it's like, all right, what is she? Like we want to know more about her. I think Stephanie Vaquer is in that boat right now. Like she's likable. They pushed her up quickly from NXT. We know she can go in the ring. But storyline-wise, like we haven't seen something yet to want to care. Whereas Liv showing that edge and be the bad girl and the Dom stuff, like we care about her. And that's why you want to see someone like that win.
Yeah, so I think maybe you convinced me to kind of flip those top two. But again, I just and maybe because, yeah, a win from Jade over Rhea would push her. But like, man, we still need to see more out of Jade.
Oh, completely agree. Like, this is a sink or swim moment. And I think Rhea has gotten that boat where you use the term where you put her in there with a broomstick. She's going to have a great match. But if you're Jade and it doesn't work out, I'd be concerned if I was WWE.
Again, the poster looks great.
Yes.
Those two, like the poster looks fantastic, but this is the problem we've had with Jade Cargill this entire time. And I think, and part of it's creative, like they haven't allowed her to like completely, I don't know if they don't trust her or whatever it is, but like I said, like she cut the same promo for like a month straight. And that's she didn't have an opponent. She's not defending it. Like you have to add layers. Yes, she's a badass that can take anybody. But like you've got to build that more instead of just like, oh, hey, here's our champion.
Right. And you mentioned the social media stuff. Like those two have gone back and forth this week. Chelsea Green, Piper Nevin was involved. You see the reports. It's a work. It's a shoot. It feels very worky and it feels sort of desperate.
I don't care if it's work. I don't care if it's a shoot. You come after our U.S. Yeah. champion, the that real U.S. Part. Champion. Yeah, you come after Chelsea Green, you got to mess with GKW. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
I'm just saying it feels desperate from a WWE standpoint. It's like, shit, how do we tell this story and make it compelling on TV where, you know, we only have 3 hours on Friday. There's only so much we can do. Let's take it to social and make it look real and say it's unreal and call it real. Like, it feels a little desperate on their part right now.
Yeah, yeah. But like I said, you do not mess. I mean, it looks like, by the way, if you mess with Chelsea Green, you got to mess with Randy Orton now since he's the Secretary of Slay. Or Slay. There's a bunch of S's in there.
Danhausen is about to get a Hathausen. Like, that's a big tag team partner to have as well.
Very beautiful, very evil hat. Yep. That's going to be an Undertaker.
Oh, yes.
The Undertaker's a part of the cabinet for Chelsea Green as well. So the list continues to grow of people you got to mess with if you decide to go after friend of show Chelsea Green.
It's amazing. She is, doesn't even need to be in the ring, and she's one of the most entertaining pieces of WWE television right now.
Yes, she just continues to deliver week in and week out. As for the men's side, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm rooting for Randy just because it would be different.
Sure, yeah.
And I'd be curious to see what he does. And look, his character work and the way he's, like, as he's gotten older and matured, it's just been fun to watch him, like, as a person. Yeah. Like, he just, it's hard. I think it's hard for him to be a heel. And in, like, the 2010s, whenever he was a face, it was just kind of like, yeah, sure. But then when he was a heel, like, you get back into the character, right? It just felt right. If he was aligning himself with Triple H and Stephanie or whatever it was doing, like, it just felt like he should be a heel. Now, with, like, the perspective he has on life, with a lot of the, you know, things that he's gone through his life, he just loves being around professional wrestling, and he's just, it feels like he should be a baby face at this point. And I'm rooting for him to get one last run as WWE champion.
Yeah, he does seem to be having fun out there. Like, basically, ever since the Matt Riddle stuff, like when RK-Bro was born, all of a sudden we started seeing that side of him. I love him as a heel. I do wonder if the Cody side of it does lean to him becoming a heel. Like, him taking the chance of hitting the RKO on Saturday was that sort of storytelling of, I'm not going to hesitate. I'm going to take it an opportunity there. But yet, to that point about the fans, going back to that, I don't know if heel Randy Orton gets booed, even against Cody. So
they're singing his song. Like, how many, like, Randy said, like, he listens to that song, like, basically, like, I didn't know people knew the lyrics to the song. Like, I've been listening to this song for 20 years as I come out to the ring, didn't realize people knew the bleeping lyrics.
Yeah.
And here they, like, they're singing him to the ring every single, like, you can't, maybe try to turn him heel, I guess, but it's not going to stick. People are going to root for him.
Because him and Cody, if that's the match, which we assume it is, you want to make one of them a heel, don't you?
Yeah, probably.
Cody naturally becomes more of a heel. Like, he can lean in on, like, yeah, I got another opportunity. I'm spoiled, whatever. Like, I'm the champion now. Like, they need me. And then Randy dethrones him. But I don't think they're willing to throw away all that merch money.
Yeah, but are you? I mean, like, if Cody's a heel, like, he's still selling t-shirts.
I don't. He feels like one of those guys, though, that, like, still is very in the kayfabe where I don't know if he's doing those appearances. And if he is, he's being an ass and he's being a heel in terms of that, to where that doesn't work with Good Morning America. Like, it's weird. It's like, oh, that guy's a jerk. We don't want him on television. Like, yeah. I'm just curious to see how that would look on the WWE programming.
Yeah. I mean, look, and Cody has said, and again, Cody's always working, right? Like, yes. He's old school. So when he says he never wants to be a heel, you don't know if you want to believe it or not believe it, because he's always working, which I appreciate. But I think he's got to have a heel run at some point.
Yeah.
Like, just to freshen up the character.
I hope so. I think that would freshen up. I think it would give us a different angle.
Especially if they turn Trick babyface.
Yes.
Like, Trick is somebody that he's hit a couple of these interview circuits already, and it's been... Dude's an electric factory.
Yeah. And it's weird. The report's out. It's almost like they have a quota of, like, hey, we need to have X amount of faces and X amount of heels. The reports is Trick and Sammy essentially flipping sides.
Yeah, doing a double switch, having a Mania match between the two of them and doing a double switch, you know, a la Bret Hart and Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13.
But, like, that was dramatic. WWE, like, if you have a catchphrase or a cool song, like, you're a babyface.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it takes. Like, oh, you were mean. Like, yeah. But, like, whoop that trick. It's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, but right. Look, me. Yeah. I don't give a damn who you screwed backstage.
Right.
When I hear that music and you start walking to that ring, I am going to yell, whoop that trick so damn loud.
Like, it's one of the best reactions right now, and he's technically a heel. Like, it's WWE logic.
Well, so, like, what? Because here's the thing. Like, I don't want Trick to, like, lose the edge he has.
Right. I mean, it'd be the same character. Like, I don't think...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know what you do to make him baby... Like, how do you make him more babyface? Dude's already over. As we've mentioned on the show, Randy Orton is yelling, whoop that trick before doing his, the hanging DDT that he does. Like, I don't know how much more over... And likable you can make this guy.
Like, I'm trying to visualize what, like, the turn is. Like, is it just him smacking high fives on the way down now? Like, is that the only difference in the character?
I guess.
Like, oh, babyface, now I'm going to be a high five on the way down.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But, I am excited about the youth, and we have talked about this for a long time in the WWE, with Trick finally up, Javon finally up. Little disappointed with... the Oba build, because I feel like they could be doing even more. And like the thing that they did with him and Rusev on Monday was just weird. Rusev's like, hey, come down here for a fight. They exchange a little bit and then Rusev runs away. Didn't like that. That was kind of strange, but whatever.
We get the rematch Monday. But if Oba beats Brock, you got to feel good about that. If that's what we're going.
Yeah. If that's the direction they go, since they're doing the Brock Lesnar open challenge. But yeah, if Oba goes over Brock, yeah. Hard to disagree with that. What I'm saying is I want Oba more on my television more. That's all I'm asking.
No, I completely agree. And that's it. Like, we keep talking about the youth, and like, it's not going to be in the main event picture yet, but there are opportunities where, like, all right, let them shine. Like, Javon was a little underwhelming in the chamber. Like, he was there, but it wasn't a huge moment. I'm hoping we get some of that stuff at Mania, where if Oba beats Brock, that's a moment. Trick and Sammy, like, that could be a moment. Javon sort of feels left out right now, but maybe there's a multi-man ladder match where he's able to, you know, hit some spots that are then replayed in video packages. So just some way to get those young stars in front of everyone's eyes.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I don't know if that's Intercontinental. I don't know if that's, you know, it's not because now that Penta's the IC champ.
Right.
Like, so do you do that kind of traditional ladder match for the IC title, throw Javon in there, let him do a couple of cool spots?
There's a TV opening match also.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just everyone flipping and car crash. Yeah, that's a way to open.
Seems like night one opening.
Yeah.
On ESPN, too. That's, Penta, you don't necessarily need
Javon,
names there. Just
Who else? El Grande? Like, there's plenty of bodies you can throw in there.
Probably both El Grandes, to be honest.
That's four already. So, I think, you can easily build that one out.
Yeah, kind of seems like we're going towards Mysterio Finn, Dom Finn at Mania.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun. That should be a good match. All right, what do we got at number two this week?
All right, Jay Hood and I had the opportunity to catch up with a Hall of Famer earlier this week, Paul Ellering, longtime manager of the Road Warriors. We saw him recently with Karrion Kross, a WWE Hall of Famer, and we had a chat with the Hall of Famer himself, Paul Ellering.
Welcome into Good Karma Wrestling along with Brian Rowitz from ESPN West Palm. I'm Jonathan Hood from ESPN Chicago. Thanks so much for being with us. We have a special guest with us right here. World-class professional big-time wrestling presents March Mayhem. Brian, what a great time for March Mayhem. You know why? It's March.
Oh, it worked out perfect.
March 14th at from noon to 10 o'clock at the Shoemaker Center in Chillicothe, Ohio. Make sure that you get your tickets. So many greats will be there, but none greater than the Hall of Famer. Precious Paul Ellering is with us here on Good Karma Wrestling. Precious Paul, it is Jonathan and Brian. Thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the event itself, because we're going to be inducted into the Ohio Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And the Road Warriors deserve to be there.
That's so awesome. That is so awesome. You're going to be there. And again, tickets are available by going to WCPBTW.com. com for tickets. SimpleTix.com will get you there as well at the Shoemaker Center in Chillicothe, Ohio. Paul, before we go into the induction, I just want to know how you're feeling. How's life for you right now?
I feel great. I'm going to be 73 this summer, and I worked out for 3 hours this morning, running stairs, and then I'll do 300 push-ups this afternoon. So I'm really blessed. I got good health, and I get up early every morning. I get up at 5 o'clock, and I do the markets all day. And until noon, anyway, and I don't like trading the afternoon, and so I got something to get me out of the bed every day.
You mentioned the Road Warriors in 2026. The term Road Warriors pop is still a thing when someone is extremely over. For you being a part of it, what was that experience like when you heard that crowd and you're like, oh, this is working right now?
Well, it was just justification for what we were doing, That was always the symbol of they are over, in the business. They are over. And whenever wherever we went, and all the years where I booked them independently also, we would go and the house would jump by one third, and that was just a testament to the drawing power of the Legion of Doom or the Road Warriors. They were the best of their time, the best of all time. It says it right on my shirt.
Yeah, it does say that is the best of all time. There's no doubt. From someone being in Chicago in Vern's territory, for the AWA, just for them to come on the scene in the Midwest representing Chicago was so huge. I just it had to be a time, Paul, that you saw those two together. Did you have that time, like, you know what, this is going to click? What territory was it? And when you said, you know what, this is going to click, this is going to work for the long
Well, it
haul.
was in Georgia where Ole had put us together. I was already managing. I had Buzz Sawyer, and I had Jake the Snake, the Spoiler, Don Jardine, Bundy for a while, and then my tag team was Arn Anderson and Matt Bourne. And Matt Bourne got himself into some trouble. And so Ole had to have a tag team. And he called up Eddie Sharkey, who was running a training camp up in Minneapolis. And Ole went up there and checked out Mike and Joe, Hawk and Animal, and said, okay, be at TV next week. And the rest was history. He put him with me. And he said, okay, these two boys are from Minnesota. You're from Minnesota. Take care of them and make sure they don't get in any trouble. And that got to be like a book that you have to read.
You yourself, a WWE Hall of Famer, news coming out literally a few hours ago. Demolition, Axe and Smash will be part of the class of 2026 in the WWE Hall of
Oh,
Fame.
they will.
How fitting is that to see them get that honor?
It was tremendously fitting. I'll just pass it on. If they want somebody to do something to do with the ceremony, I'm available.
Look at that.
I would gladly do that for them. I
You
just saw
just
them a couple of weeks ago.
broke the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul, I think you just broke the internet with that.
Well, that's good.
Hey, well,
They
you know,
deserve it.
the
They
reason why
deserve
that,
it.
the reason
It's
why
been
we
a
say
long
that,
time.
Paul, the reason why we say
Pardon?
that you broke the internet is because you know that there is a line of demarcation between you, the Road Warriors, and Demolition. There is
Right.
a there are Demolition guys and there's Road Warriors guys, because when they came on the scene, people thought, no, the Road Warriors are the genuine article. So
Yeah.
that's what you're saying, that is that's pretty high praise.
Well, copycats are it's the greatest form of flattery. And we had many people that tried to follow the Road Warriors and borrow from them, but I just would tell the guys, hey, it's flattering that they are trying to emulate you, but you can never copy the original. It's like Elvis. There's thousands of Elvis impersonators, but there was only one Elvis. And the Road Warriors came along with the same type of deal. Elvis was in the late 50s, and he completely changed the demographics of rock and roll music. And he's always going to be the legend. And the Road Warriors did the same thing. Cable TV was just starting in the early 80s. And when the Road Warriors came along, and I broke in under the old school wrestling, where you would grab a hold and work a hold and tell a story, the Road Warriors changed the whole dynamics. It went from wrestling to power and flamboyant. And then they combined that with the look, the Road Warrior look, and they just took over the business. And with cable spreading all over the country, everybody wanted to see the Road Warriors. They were the best of their time, the best of all time. And that they had the, and not only were they really good in the ring, and they had a unique style with the power moves, they had the it factor. And I knew that about a year into the managing them. I said, these guys are going to go a long way, because they had the it. They could do interviews, and they just got better and better and better, and they grew into it. And I really missed them.
Precious Paul Ellering with us on Good Karma Wrestling. World-class professional big-time wrestling presents March Mayhem, March 14th. Make sure you're there at noon at the Shoemaker Center in Chillicothe, Ohio. A really great event, because the Road Warriors and more will be honored at this stellar event taking place in Chillicothe, Ohio, for the Hall of Fame. How influential, Paul, were you with the boys on money and stock markets in the locker rooms in your day?
Oh, very. You know, we were like the Three Musketeers, and we were always together, because in 84, 85, we moved back to Minneapolis, and that's when we started to work for the AWA, for Vern, and I always had in with Vern because he broke me in the business. So I asked the guys, I said, you want to move back to Minneapolis? And they said, yeah, we'd like to move back. So I called Vern up, and we always ended up in Minneapolis, and I worked out the plane flights, and we met at the airport. We were always on the same flights, and I made the hotel reservation, so we were always in the same room, and we were like family, and we were together more at that time, because especially when we signed our deal with Crockett, it was for 300 days a year, 300 appearances. And so you were hardly ever home. You know, if you dead-ended for one day, you just stayed there and then went on to wherever you were going to go. So we were together more than we were with our families.
Yeah, Paul, but I mean, it's a great run, but at the end of that run with Vern, I mean, just to be honest, losing to Jimmy Garvin and Steve Regal, that's a black mark on your record. You can't lose to those guys on the way out. Not those two. Come on, you're the Legion of Doom. You can't do that. I was mad as a fan here in Chicago. I didn't want to see that run end against those two. No. Come on now.
Yeah, I know. But we were still businessmen.
Yeah, I understand.
And that was all on me. We were still businessmen.
The last time we saw you on WWE television with Karrion Kross, someone the fans got behind, but there was a disconnect with him in the front office. What do you think was missing there in terms of Karrion Kross, now, you know, Killer Kross on the indies?
Yeah, he's a tremendous talent. I don't know. I think WWE really missed the boat on it, because he's selling out wherever he goes now. He's a tremendous talent. And, I think they just missed the boat, but they did with us too.
Yeah.
There's no business deal. I don't know. because I don't know his contract and all that.
One thing, Paul, is that Karrion Kross, he really delves into the evil and the mean. I wonder, from your standpoint, you know, when you're a character, how can you be able to hold on to that? Just be saying, you know, I'm evil, I'm mean, and for it to be a believable character. What's the science in that?
Well, you got to be like the dollar bill with the pyramid and the eye in the pyramid. You know what I mean?
I do.
To be evil, yes. That's what you have to do.
Don't forget, world-class professional big-time wrestling taking place in Chillicothe, Ohio, March 14th at noon. And as you mentioned, Paul, the Road Warriors going into the Hall of Fame there on that event, right?
Yes. Yeah, the Ohio Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And
well,
I'm looking forward to it. There's, I think, three other teams along with us, but it'll be good to see all the fans there and hear their stories about how they appreciated the Road Warriors. And I'll tell a few stories. And it's like you get all these guys together, the lies just get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, we're glad you spent some time with some Good Karma Wrestling. We just want to connect with you and promote the event. So, as always, we appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you and what you do for the sport, and wish you guys good luck along the way.
Paul Ellering, WWE Hall of Famer. He's got a lot of stuff still going on. You can catch that entire conversation if you want on our YouTube page, youtube.com/@GoodKarmaWrestling. Because, again, the dude's got stories. He's got stories and stories and stories that he just wants to share, Brian.
That's right. So check out on YouTube. There's even more to that conversation. A Hall of Famer going into other Hall of Fames, still making appearances. It's cool to see these guys still connected with the business.
All right. What do we got at number three this week?
AEW Revolution, a little over a week away, and the card starting to fill out. And as expected with an AEW pay-per-view, it is a full one. It is a star-studded one. Here's the card so far. MJF versus Hangman, world title, Texas Death. Moxley versus Takeshita for the Continental title. FDR versus Young Bucks for the tag titles. Andrade versus Bandido. Swerve versus Brody King. Tekla versus Stat for the women's title, 2 out of 3 falls. And just announced, Fletcher, Okada, and Mark Davis defend the trios titles against Jet Speed and Mystico. Which Revolution match are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, Mystico ends up being the replacement for Hangman Adam Page because he's got something else he's got going on. I mean, it's been MJF Hangman, although I'm intrigued by Brody King and Swerve. I mean, depending upon what happens in their next two shows in the run-up to the show next weekend, like, could that change? It's getting that much closer. I'm really intrigued by that. And again, it's a typical AEW pay-per-view where, I mean, all the seven that you just went through are all intriguing for their own separate reasons. But those are the top two that I have in my mind to start with.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. Like, there was a long buildup. There was a long gap between the December pay-per-view and this one. They told stories, though. They got us all excited. We're still a week and a half away from this pay-per-view. And the same complaints that we have about some of these Mania matches, we don't really have on AEW. Like, these are matches they've told stories we're excited about from a sheer wrestling standpoint, and there will be 27 five-star matches, I'm sure, by the end of the night. Swerve and Brody, the styles, the energy, the way those two are every time they deliver, like, that match, can I call it now one of the matches of the year, even though we haven't even rung the bell yet?
I mean,
I'm ready to.
Yeah. I mean, again, and that's the problem with some of these for AEW, right? Like, that could end up being a great match, but it somehow might not live up to expectations because of what you just said. You're not alone in those expectations, right? Where you're getting really excited for that. This is a huge spot. Is this the biggest spot Brody's been in for a pay-per-view?
I think so. And I think I'm very happy that they've stuck with him. I was a little worried that they said, hey, here's a world title opportunity. It's a Saturday and we never hear from him again. They're keeping him front and center. I assume he loses this match so you can keep the Swerve momentum going. But the fact that he's there, it's one-on-one. It's not tag. It's not trios. It's not pre-show. It's a big spot for Brody.
Yeah, and it's going to have a great opportunity for him to continue to show what he can do in the ring.
Right.
Like, he's continued to develop his character beyond somebody who came out with what was he calling himself in AEW?
Alistair Malakai.
Malakai,
buddy, yeah, there Malakai.
Oh yeah, so you know everyone would just bark when he came out because he, you know, obviously this huge character. But I mean, he's continued to develop that, and it seems like most dangerous in AEW is that title's on the line. Whoever's the most dangerous man in AEW unofficially seems to be on the line in that match. That's going to be fun. Like Andrade and Bandido is one that is probably just going to be awesome in the ring. It's one of those AEW matches where they kind of explained it backstage last night, but doesn't really matter because it's going to be in the middle of the card and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But Tech versus Stat, 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, interesting stipulation. Like when we saw them in the strap match, we said, let's run it back. 2 out of 3 needs a little bit of time. I'm curious to see how that route goes.
What do you mean? Because this thing's going to be 5 hours.
That's a good point.
This isn't a WWE pay-per-view. Like, they don't care how long these things take.
I wonder, is because AEW tried to be a little different, if it's a sweep. When was the last time we saw a sweep in a 2 out of 3 falls match?
It's been forever.
Like, maybe we go that route?
But that would, I mean, I think that would really help Tech. Like,
yeah.
I think that would help her if Tekla went over like that. If she just went boom, boom, 1, 2, hey, I'm a badass champ. Come get me.
Yeah.
Just bring it. So I think that could be interesting if that's the route they go. I doubt they do, but certainly be a surprise if that's the route.
Yeah, and then the other one, we talk about expectations, FTR and the Bucks. Like, I know people seem tired of it, even though it hasn't actually happened that often. But, like, those four, when you put them in the ring, they're going to deliver. That's what they do. They are the epitome of tag team wrestling in 2026. Like, that's going to come through.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Honestly, Mox versus Takeshita, especially with the story they're telling within Don Callis' family. Takeshita doesn't have a championship. They're trying to get championships for everybody else. And well, that kind of runs over. I think eventually Takeshita's probably going to leave the family the way that treating him. But again, that's going to be fun. But still, MJF Hangman, and probably because they threw the stipulation of Hangman can never challenge for the championship again if he
leaves. Yeah.
Like, it's still what it comes down to for me. I'm surprised they stuck with it. They had an opportunity to take the off-ramp last week. They did not. And, you know, went with the double-sided coin, MJF trying to, you know, get his way out of that, and then they throw it out there anyway. And so they're rolling with it, which, again, it wasn't great when Cody decided to do it for himself, right, when they started AEW. Makes me think Hangman's got to win, and maybe MJF has, like, other things he's got to go do after this pay-per-view.
Sure. But that intrigue alone, and it being Texas Death, like, yes, like, it is well-deserving of the main event spot, and it is something that you want to see where, even with all these stipulations, you can make a case for both sides. And I think that's one of the things AEW does best is you go into these matches like, oh, this guy should win. It's like, well, no, actually, this guy should win. Like, there aren't many foregone conclusions up and down that car where it's like, well, this is definitely going that way.
And I'm guessing at some point, like, some people are going to come out to help Hangman because it's a Texas Death match. There's no disqualifications. Sure. And does MJF have some sort of trick up his sleeve where somebody debuting, somebody coming back to help him out and beat Hangman? I don't know. It's got a ton of intrigue, though. I'm pumped for it.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're still going to get another 3 to 5 matches added to this card somehow. But we're a week plus away, and I'm pumped.
Let's take a look. So what do they have at World's End?
I'm trying to think.
At, like, World's End, they had 4 matches on the pre-show, 9 matches on the actual card. So in terms of getting some more pre-match, you know, we could get some pre-shows on there, but we're still like 2 away from getting a full main card for an AEW pay-per-view.
Maybe a women's tag match. I mean, Ciampa has been pretty prevalent. Ciampa dropping hints. Maybe FTR versus Ciampa and ? It sort of felt like that last night.
It did. And I mean, Gargano's too busy laying on things in WWE. Yeah. And we haven't heard anything about his contract expiring.
Roll him right down the street to AEW. We'll work. Just saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who Ciampa could get, but yes, I would agree. That seems to be a direction that could potentially be heading. You know, Jack Perry is still not on this with his issues with Ricochet. So that still certainly has an opportunity to find its way on the card. If they add that Saturday night on Collision, I guess that's
that could be the blow up for that. If you do that and then the women's tag titles, that's 9 on the main card.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in.
But yeah, I feel like you got to get Ciampa on the main card.
Yeah.
It was such a big debut, and it feels like you're missing out on something if he's not on the main card.
Yeah, he talked about trying to get back in the title picture. I know they mentioned him and Briscoe again. Like, is there something there? We just throw those two out there. You know, it'll be good.
Can you imagine if they put that on the pre-show?
Yes, it's AEW, yes.
No, I can't. They can't. Like, I can see putting Briscoe on the pre-show, sure. Yeah. But you can't put your new free agent on the pre-show.
I wonder if the trios match, like, that felt pre-show-esque when I saw that announced.
Sure, but are you putting Okada and Fletcher on the pre-show?
Right. Yeah, that is the weird part. Like, I thought we'd get Fletcher defending the title, but shout out to our guy, Kyle Fletcher, double champ now. So at least he's still going to be on the card.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, tip of the cap, they've done a good job of telling intriguing stories to get us here. Again, you know, it's been an intriguing story with MJF and Hangman, FTR and Young Bucks, as you mentioned, kind of writes itself. Mox and Takeshita have been going back and forth. I mean, the only thing that doesn't really have, I mean, I guess you could say Andrade versus Bandido, and then the Trios Championship haven't had much story behind it. But with the Don Callis family, they're everywhere.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just the Andrade one. We're like, yeah, they tried last night, and but Andrade answered the phone and like, okay, like there's something missing there, but the bell's gonna ring and we'll forget all that.
Yeah, and again, if AEW still is telling stories and sets, you know, 6 out of the 7, I'll certainly take it.
Completely.
All right, Brian, what do we got this week? News and notes.
Logan Paul on the Impulsive, his podcast, talking about the WWE rings and the logos, said the middle of the WWE ring can become, quote, really slippery by the end of the show due to those logos that are painted on the mat. He explained that wrestlers have to be really careful with their foot placement and movements to avoid slipping. The painting logos make it difficult to, quote, get running full speed.
Yeah, that's interesting, because he also went on to talk about he knows about that paint, because the Prime logo is the first one on there, and they were kind of concerned about it at first. They used a specific kind of paint. Now it seems like they're not using that kind of paint. So interesting points brought up by Logan Paul about the safety of the performers, and especially when you start thinking about full speed. I guess my mind also went to Bron Breakker whenever he comes back. Like, if his whole thing is his speed, he wears a shirt touting how fast he is. So if he can't get up to full speed before he hits a spear in a big match like that, that's certainly something I think WWE's got to be mindful of.
Oh, I'm sure TKO will give up sponsor dollars and, you know, be concerned, but good on him for speaking out at least. Like, not a lot of people have the power to be able to speak out, but him actually doing that, shout out to him on that.
Correct. Yes. Nobody. I'm not sure if anybody else has the power to do what he just did.
Cody, Roman, Punk?
Sure, but like, actually, I would just say Cody and Roman. Because if Punk did it, if Punk That's did it, fair. He would, as somebody who has had a history of complaining about a lot of stuff, I think he would be taken into a different light if Punk did it.
I think that's fair. We saw the debut on Saturday of Danhausen, which was met with a, mixed reaction, but he turned it around on Monday with his list of Demandhausens, and now his shirt, one of the top selling on WWE Shop. PW Insider reports WWE officials have been, quote, pleasantly surprised with the early numbers on sales. The report also notes Danhausen expected to go to the PC to get some work later this week.
What are we talking about? Pleasantly surprised. The only reason you signed Danhausen is sell t-shirts. Like, that's the reason. And for him to do the backstage segments that he did, like the reaction went actually worse than I thought, because I thought more people in Chicago, I don't know if they just didn't know who he was because he hasn't been on television for a long time, what kind of crowd it ultimately ended up being in Chicago. Cause I always look at Chicago more of a, not as a WWE town, but just a professional wrestling town that kind of is aware of all things going on. But it's been a minute since Danhausen's been on TV. Probably not the best way to introduce him. The backstage segment that he had with Adam Pearce was fantastic. Like, that is a Danhausen segment. That's how that should work. you know, and you know, him cursing Dom, Dom going out and losing, his list of demand housings that he dropped in the toilet. yes, everything there for Danhausen. That is how that should have been. It shouldn't have been this big reveal. It shouldn't have been this big thing that you boasted up for weeks, because Danhausen's just not that guy. He certainly provides value, but in the way you used him on Monday, not in the way you used him on Saturday.
I know, I was legit sad by Saturdays, where like hearing those boos, hearing the silence, I'm like, oh, this is not going to work. But to turn it around 48 hours later, even in that backstage where it's like, oh, the, you know, the big ovation I received.
The raucous
Saturday.
Applause or whatever he said.
Yes. Like, all right, now we're talking. And he got his first demand. He got Triple H pointing finger. Like, he got the picture after the show. So those demands are coming. The Hall of Fame is next. I believe a blimp, his picture on the side of trucks. Like, it's coming in no time.
Well, again, I wonder how many more people he's got to curse before people pick up on, hey, this guy means business.
And I've seen a lot of people say, like, oh, like, you have R-Truth ready to do stuff like this. You have nearly 6 hours of television. Like, they can live in their own worlds. When they interact, it'll be fun stuff. Like, we'll make it happen. It'll be fine. Finally,
R-Truth, did you see he shaved his head? We got a ball of R-Truth now.
About that. And finally, news and notes. Speaking of WrestleMania and Vegas, matches starting to be announced on the Indy card. We know Joey Janela's spring break will include Sandman's final match against Invisible Man. We now know Joey Janela's opponent on that match. In the main event, he will take on 14-year-old Brody Lee Jr. It is official for Spring Break 10 at the Horseshoe Casino in Vegas. It's part of GCW's The Collective, and it'll be part of Triller TV as well.
Man, there's just no rules in Vegas, right? Because I mean, he got a really good promo, by the way. Got a really good promo that was making its rounds on the internet. Who was that with that he was cutting the promo with?
It was with Janela, because he called Janela Megan Bain's bitch. And it set it up.
Yeah, he got a really good promo. And in the promo, they were in New York, I think, and he went after New York because he's 14. They wouldn't let him wrestle. Which, again, good on New York for not letting a 14-year-old wrestle. But again, it's Nevada. There's no rules. You can kind of do whatever you want, even if you're 14. I mean, he's clearly going over. So
yeah, I'm pumped for it, though. I feel like it's going to be a fun one. His first ever singles match. He's been doing this forever. I'm looking forward to that one, him and Janela.
It should be a lot of fun. It should be a lot of fun. What did you have this week? Matches of the week.
Going back to Elimination Chamber, I think the Women's Chamber was awesome. The storytelling, spotlighting different people. Then you see the men's side, it's like, oh, that's when it doesn't work. Like, the Chamber concept, I think we're sort of Hell in a Cell-esque right now. I don't know if it's necessary every year, especially if it's not going to mean anything, and you're going to leave the door open and things like that. But the Women's Chamber delivered on Saturday.
Well, again, because the Men's Chamber is just interference after interference after interference. Right. Like, it's the same play from the same playbook, and the women's then stands out, much like the women's Rumble stood out. We're on a run here, so I'm with you on the Women's Chamber. MJF versus Kevin Knight last night to kick things off was fantastic. That's certainly on my list.
Yep.
I don't want to say pleasantly surprised, because we knew Kevin Knight could go, but they ended up having a longer match than I was anticipating.
And then Knight,
Dynamite last night.
Knight doing double duty. I feel like the AEW announced main event in-show, I don't remember the last time, if ever, that's happened. And we got a six-man to end the show last night. That was a fun one.
And then I had I keep going back and forth, but I think I liked Gunther versus Dragon Lee on Raw more than I liked Punk versus Finn.
Okay. I think they were both good. My other one I was going to go was Thunder Rosa, still really good. And you throw her out there, she makes things happen. And her and Tekla was a banger last night.
Yeah. Yeah, for her, it's just a matter of staying healthy.
Right, yes.
You know, like, can she stay healthy? Because if she does, she's just going to continue to lift a women's division that's already very, very strong.
Right.
So, yeah, and that's missing arguably their biggest star?
Yeah, I think so. And, like, Rick everything Baker? Is still doing, yeah. And Tony's still doing other stuff around, not the title, but, like, solid week of wrestling. I eliminated Chamber literally outside of the main event was a solid card. Like, I enjoyed
it. It was great to see AJ in her. Like, I felt she really delivered in her first singles match.
Yeah.
In a decade.
And Becky still being awesome and doing all her stuff on social. Like, we're on the road to Mania.
I mean, is she going to crash? Like, whatever they're going to do, are we going to get run that back? Or is Becky going to try? I mean, Becky doesn't have a dance partner right now.
Right.
Like, everybody else was lining up to face AJ Lee on Monday. Becky was nowhere to be seen.
It's weird in the women's division, like, you have title matches, but then there feels like there's a lot of uncertainty to where everyone else is going to go. Like, I can make a case, Bayley and Lyra challenge for the tag titles, so you get them on the show.
Okay.
You mentioned Becky to them dance partner. Io doesn't have one. Unless we go Io and AJ.
Say less. All right.
Natty. I mean, it's like Natty gets left out, but like there's, you got to speed up the clock a little bit. We're a little over a month away from Mania.
Yeah. They got to figure a lot of that stuff out. But like we said, we are on the road to WrestleMania. We are getting close to Revolution. Check out all the content we have on the YouTube page, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. Check out the entire interview that we had with Paul Ellering that we heard earlier in the show. And we'll talk about all of this and that Revolution preview coming up next week here on GKW.